Okay, look, so I try not to talk about politics these days because it's such a cartoonish wasteland. It's no longer the best and the brightest, if it ever has been, but now it's the dumbest and the dimmest. So there was this No Kings peaceful protest yesterday, and these morons like Catherine Levitt, the White House press secretary, and the absolute sycophant fool Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, were making comments tying the No Kings protesters to Hamas terrorists, violent criminals, and American-hating Antifa members. To which I say, are you guys fucking stupid or what? First of all, it's dangerous to label people protesting as the enemy. Haven't you learned enough from our history? It's not wise. It turns up the temperature and it could lead to people getting hurt or killed. Any mass protests will get a few idiots participating. But most of these people love America or the idea of America, and they don't like the direction we're going in. It's not a bunch of Marxists. My 81-year-old mother and her friends went to a protest near Sacramento, so the crowd wasn't filled with terrorists or some shit. This isn't the Bader-Meinhof group or something. I mean, can't we all stop demonizing each other to try and figure some shit out together? I mean, the reality is, until the orange dildo's term is up, I don't anticipate anything changing for the better. All we can do is try and remain decent for the time being and just kind of live our life with some kind of dignity amidst this chaos. All right, prepare for liftoff.
You are my density. You are my density.
Okay, so me and my buddy Buckley went to Forest Lawn Cemetery in the Hollywood Hills, just near Burbank. I mean, don't you guys go to cemeteries on your weekends? I mean, that's normal, right? Hello? Anyway, there are 6 forest lawns scattered around Southern California. The biggest and oldest is the Glendale Forest Lawn, which spans over 300 acres. Well, let me tell you, the Hollywood Hills Forest Lawn is also pretty massive. Everything is super scattered around. So besides the place being huge, it was also hot as shit when we went. And oh yes, we also were stoned. So it was kind of like Cheech and Chong trying to find different graves. I think it's this way, man. Hey, didn't we just go that way? No. Well, maybe we did. Anyway, I had mentioned visiting this cemetery before, and we revisited the graves of Liberace, Betty Davis, Carrie Fisher, and Debbie Reynolds. But one of the newer occupants is Matthew Perry. Bob Newhart was also recently buried here, but it was just too hot to try and find his grave. My apologies, and some other time, Mr. Newhart. But Matthew Perry's grave is actually an unmarked wall crypt. I'm not sure if there's going to be a marker or not, but for now, it's unmarked. So Buckley and I paid our respects. And an interesting piece of trivia for your back pocket. This one should stump the average mortal. But what was Matthew Perry's first movie appearance? It's not easy. Though I have mentioned this movie before. It is, drumroll please, 1988's A Night in the Life of Jimmy Reardon with River Phoenix. Also starring, Meredith Salinger. Good God, I had the hots for her. Not a great movie, but if it's got River Phoenix, then there's a reason to see it. So will Matthew Perry's grave remain unmarked and join such other unmarked celebrities like George C. Scott, Roy Orbison, and Frank Zappa? We shall see. Speaking of unmarked graves, yes, as previously mentioned, while I was living up in Palo Alto, my buddy Charlie and I spent a fruitless, pardon the pun, but it's pretty clever. So let me repeat, we spent a fruitless search for the unmarked grave of Mr. Apple himself, Steve Jobs. I tried to gather up some info as to the location of the grave. There's a short description of the area in the Walter Isaacson book, Steve Jobs, from 2011. And you know, Walter Isaacson just kind of seems like a bullshit artist. There's something so phony about him. Anyway, Charlie and I walked around aimlessly. We found nothing. And honestly, I went more for the challenge of trying to find the grave. I have no real interest or idolization of Steve Jobs. The guy ultimately sounded like an asshole. And the advent of computers and smartphones have wrecked everything anyway. I guess if I was going to have a grave, it would be unmarked, so only my loved ones and friends would know where I was buried. But I want no grave, friends. Whoever is near me when I croak, please scatter my ashes wherever you deem appropriate. Graveyards are like weird fucking places, man. They're kind of maudlin. Like whenever I visit my dad's grave, it's like, okay, there's his name, and his body is in the ground, but that's not really him, you know? He's always with me, in my head, in my heart. I mean, inside that grave is the vessel he used while he was on this earth. But his memory and spirit is inside me. Okay, I'm starting to sound like a goddamn Hallmark card. So anyway, the Forest Lawn in Hollywood Hills was quite a trek from my place, and I was using that Waze driving app, you know, which is largely helpful, but sometimes it makes some bad decisions. And once you get to know a town pretty well, sometimes you know not to take a certain route, even if Waze is suggesting it. Which reminded me of a hilarious moment with my mom. We were driving from her house to Sprouts. She was like, oh, you can go straight here. And I was like, well, Waze is telling me this other way, so I'm going to do that. So we were driving, kind of approaching some train tracks, and there's a red light, and goddamn son of a bitch, the railroad gate starts to close, and here comes a train. Okay, so no big deal at first. I'm like, chill. And then like 4 or 5 minutes pass, I'm shitting you not, and the train is still crossing. And finally, I cannot hold it in, and I'm like, holy shit, how long is this train? I mean, it was comical. I've never seen a train this long. And of course, I'm sure my mom was thinking, you idiot, you should have listened to me. But it was a hilarious experience I will never forget. So, you know, it was actually worth it. I haven't really watched a lot this week, but I did see the new horror film on Paramount called Vicious, starring Dakota Fanning, in a pretty muddled psychological thriller about a tormented woman played by Dakota Fanning. She's visited by some weirdo who brings a box to her, tells her to follow the instructions, and then this weird lady leaves. So Dakota has to go through some like strange psychological shit to placate these box. There's violence. You kind of don't know what's real and what's imagined. So it just gets fucking cloudy and a little all over the place. I assume the story is some kind of allegory or some shit. And if you're a diehard horror fan, I mean, it's worth watching. The first half is pretty good, but the ending is just kind of blah. The script is pretty weak. And if you do want to watch a more effective thriller about a mysterious box, well, watch 2009's The Box. Yes, previously mentioned, this is directed by Donnie Darko's Richard Kelly, starring Cameron Diaz, James Marsden, and Frank Langella. It's a nifty movie, and it's got a great use of the Eric Clapton song Bell Bottom Blues. Okay, winding this episode down, Ace Frehley, the legendary guitarist and founding member of the band Kiss, died at age 74. Ace was kind of the defining sound of the band Kiss. He kind of got mixed up with drugs and alcohol, left the band at some point, and then rejoined. Ace Frehley was definitely the hardest partier of the band, with the other member, Gene Simmons, being a legendary teetotaler. Gene Simmons was anti-drug and anti-alcohol. And while Gene Simmons had a totally respectable and quite touching reason for not drinking, his mom was a concentration camp survivor, and he didn't want to do anything to make her suffer anymore. I have to say, I do feel for those celebrities that get lost in alcohol and drugs. Clearly, they're sensitive in some way or troubled or something, trying to escape something that's tormenting them, and fame is no cure for what ails them. And Ace Frehley's actual name is Paul Daniel Frehley. But how cool is Ace as a nickname? So anyway, rest easy, Ace. I'm hoping it's peaceful wherever you are. So to close, I will play a little bit of the Kiss song Beth from the 1976 album Destroyer. It's actually sung by the drummer Peter Criss. And it's just a beautiful little song, kind of a tortured tale of a desperate, possibly futile attempt to keep a relationship going. I was just a little kid. I had a 45 of the Kiss single Detroit Rock City, which is a pretty awesome song. But the B-side was Beth, which really knocked my socks off. I was young, but something about the lyrics stuck with me. I didn't know anything about relationships or desire or love or anything. But there was something about the song Beth that intrigued me, even at this young age. I had a sense that life gets complicated when you are older. Things aren't perfect, people aren't perfect, and sometimes life could be sad. Jesus, I got all of that from a Kiss record? Wow. Anyway, I'm off to the recording studio.
All right, so here we are back in the Hollywood recording studio. This is professional, people. $2,000 an hour now. I thought those tariffs were going to start lowering prices, but anyway, I'm going to play a little bit of Beth by the band Kiss. And to be honest, I've recorded this song 4 times so far, and it keeps sounding like shit or it's a little flat. But this is it, so let's hope this works. I'm just letting you know into the details of this podcast. I mean, it's not just me sitting here and recording. It takes work, okay?
Beth, I hear you calling, but I can't come home right now. Me and the boys are playing, and we just can't find the sound. Just a few more hours, and I'll be right home to you. I think I hear them calling. Oh, Beth, what can I do? Beth, what can I do? Say you feel so empty that a house just ain't a home. I'm always somewhere else, and you're always there alone. Just a few more hours, and I'll be right home to you. I think I hear them calling. Oh, Beth, what can I do? Beth, what can I do?